Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Tyler.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
What is happening, all you woods people? This is the Element Podcast.
Hey.
Hey, we're here. Is. Brought to you by First Light Gear. It's hotter than a pistol outside, so it's a good time to go
a
buy
$2
a, bunch
one.
A, bunch
$2
of, a bunch of warm First Light gear. So go get you some. Dang, I didn't know y'all were going
to. I love this podcast,
we're gonna
man.
Do it again.
No. This is perfect, dude.
It is a good time to get you some First Light gear, though. Anyways, we are, however, going to go do a little hunting, and I am going to wear some Trace stuff because you got to wear that hot weather stuff. I even wore my Trace pants to church this past Sunday.
Oh, man.
First time pair of First Lights ever been in church, I think.
Hope
so
you had underwear on.
I did. I was thinking about that because they're a little see-through. But I didn't hear any complaints, so who knows.
That's good, man.
Yeah, my wife usually makes sure of that kind of stuff for me. So.
Yeah.
Anyways, we are dead in the middle of buck truck season. Yeah, if y'all didn't know, we have taken whitetail season and put it right in the middle of May and June. And it's a good time, really.
That's right,
it's a good time for whitetail stuff.
You didn't know them seasons were open, did you?
That's right. We've been launching the stuff on the Meteor Channel. If you didn't know, we probably told you a lot about this. And one of the things that the loyal listeners of the Element Podcast have told us is that they really enjoy the backstory and being able to listen to the podcast in conjunction with watching a video. And the fifth installment of Buck Truck has probably come out by the time you're listening to this. And it is our Oklahoma episode. It is crazy how many good deer encounters we had with such terrible conditions and as many hunters as were around. You just might have to call it providential is all I can say. So we are going to talk a little bit about some of our past experiences in Oklahoma, some of the struggles and some of the things we've learned, and then how that kind of converted into success in the year of our Lord 2022. So if you haven't yet, go watch that episode and, leave us a nice comment on there. If you like what goes on there, we really appreciate that stuff. Helps us out a lot. It's the best way y'all can support us as the Element right now. But Tyler.
Yes, sir.
This is the first time that you have held an Oklahoma tag in quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Yeah, yeah. I think since probably 2008 or 9, if I remember correctly.
That's way back there.
Yeah.
That's like right after high school.
Yeah.
Man. Michael's like, that's the year I was born. how was the hunting back then? Did you? It was. What'd you learn from all that experience way back
well,
when?
I showed my kids a picture of this last night. No, this morning actually. Mm-hmm. This is interesting. You ask. A picture from those days with a good friend, Coyote Beaver, and it was the best. The picture is the best hunt I've ever been on.
How about that?
Yeah,
that's cool.
I shot. I didn't shoot a deer. I've never shot a deer in Oklahoma. I don't think.
How about that?
But
just give it away.
It's not as easy as people think, man.
No, it's not.
Shoot them hunt influencers. They make it look easy.
I know it.
Coyote, my friend, he shot a 10-point on the edge of a wheat field that we had this lease that was like parcels, you know, like 80 here, 160 there, 40 there.
I like it
set
up.
Yeah. It's kind of cool. The hunt's pretty big, but mm-hmm. if you're like low man on totem pole, you're going to get that like burnt grass, grassland that's 40 acres, you know, yeah. or something bad. You got to wait a few years mm-hmm. till you can get up on the good spots, but he was hunting a wheat field next to the tallest CRP field I've ever been in presence of, I think.
What does CRP stand for?
Conservation Reserve Program.
That's correct, yeah. And so
I said crop.
For the folks that don't know, and I'll be honest with you, until probably, I don't know, 2016, I didn't really know what that meant. I just thought that meant long grass, mm-hmm. and it kind of does, right? But can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, so it's a program that is part of the Farm Bill that there are other programs similar to it, like the WRP program, which is wetlands, and there's pollinator programs and stuff, and they all sit within this category where the government is subsidizing property or land use rights where – in exchange for a dollar amount, a landowner can get paid a certain dollar amount to in exchange for planting their property in a specific way or manner or seed or whatever. So, for instance, with CRP, you have to plant a certain blend of seeds, grass seeds, and I think there's a certain window that they check up on it every so often to make sure that it's doing what they want it to do, but you plant tall grass, warm season grasses, and instead of planting a monoculture such as a wheat field or mm-hmm. Beans or corn or whatever. So it's
government
a way for
subsidies.
Promotes wildlife.
The reallocation of wealth for the common farmer, but
yes.
It works out real good for a hunter.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we use the term CRP more broadly to just describe like an area that's overgrown and looks like real good deer habitat
mm-hmm.
because it is almost synonymous with good deer habitat.
Yeah. And this particular place had so many pheasants, man. And just like, cause you know, they're coming out of this big tall CRP and eating on the wheat field around the edge and going mm-hmm. back in. It's just perfect habitat. Well, same thing for deer.
Mm-hmm.
And, ironically enough. And so anyway, he shoots this just awesome kind of light horned 10 point, ends up going like 148. Just
toad.
Oh yeah. Just the deer. What's funny is, you know, the 13 inch width rule that we have in our county here in Texas had just kind of come into effect. I don't know. It had been a while, but mm-hmm. like it was a relatively new thing still, you know,
mm-hmm.
and we joked because this deer was like 12 and 7/8 wide.
I've seen this deer.
Yeah.
Now that you talk about
yeah.
that, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. He still scored 148 mm-hmm. as a 12 and 7/8 deer, you know, probably a 4-year old, mm-hmm. like a very much solid mature buck that anybody, you know, except for some of the mm-hmm. most baddest dudes would not be interested in shooting. And so it was just interesting that happened, but he shot that deer early on. And we're still up there, and my dad and I are hunting a little bit of deer and stuff like that. But he and I just start trying to shoot everything in the county, pretty much. I mean, we were like – and we took this picture where over the course of several days, you know, like we were able to stack a few pheasants. We shot some geese. We had a wheat field that was partially flooded, and it literally – like it was unbelievable. There was specks and snows on it and cranes. And so we jumped them one night off the wheat field, and they all started coming back in while we're sitting there, and we just started smoking stuff. And dude, in this picture is a 148 inch 10 point, several pheasants. I think there's like 5 quail bobwhites. There's probably like, I don't know, 6 or 8 cranes maybe. There's a few specks. There's a Canada goose. There's a couple of ducks. I think I'm missing something, but it was like
ready for a sportsman's wild game dinner.
Dude, it was awesome, and it snowed, so we just were able to like keep all the stuff for a picture.
Like,
I know people are gonna hate this, you know, but we ate everything, we took everything, cleaned it, you know, and it was fine. But it was because it was so cold, and we just left everything out and ice chest out in the snow, you know, and we're like, we're gonna take an awesome picture at the end of this thing because we, you know, and I'm glad.
Didn't y'all shoot a fox or something too? I feel like there was a predator in the mix.
We probably shot coyotes.
I mean, knowing Cody around.
We used to smoke coyotes up there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm talking like they were.
Oklahoma's good for smoking a lot of stuff.
It is, you know? Dude. They got it's all kinds of smoking there. Rules up there.
Right.
But no, we actually, he and I were kind of he was my first buddy that I ever really did video stuff with. Mm-hmm. And he had a decent camera. And we used to go up there and call. He loved coyote hunting. I did too, but he really loved it. And, we'd go up there and we'd produce some of my first videos. I don't even know. They're probably on the internet somewhere.
Ooh.
But just rolling
Mark
coyotes.
Kenyon style.
Dude. Yeah. Got to be careful. Don't want to end up looking like, you know, soft little Michelin man from Michigan.
Dang.
He would laugh, dude.
Yeah.
He's a good looking feller now. He's tan, you know.
Thin. Some people like that.
Some people like it when you look like an Axis antler.
That's it.
Dude, what's funny is, listen, y'all, Buck Truck, we hunted with Mark. We all are going to see this episode in a few weeks. And when we get to the airport, KC, he's never met Mark. We've talked to him on the phone a lot, podcasted with
felt
him.
Felt like so. We're friends, but just never like in person. Yeah.
Oh, they give a hug when they get to the airport, and the first thing KC says is, golly, you're thin.
It's true, man. Like, I could – touch my shoulders around Mark. You know what I mean?
Giving yourself a hug.
It feels like you're giving yourself a hug when you hug Mark. You're
getting a double hug when you hug Mark,
it.
Man.
But his arms are super long.
Yeah.
So
toes, too. They're weird, man.
Oh, I didn't look at those.
That dude don't wear shoes
elephant
in the summer.
Elephant foot, though, right?
Yeah, it's got the crack on the edge.
So, back to Oklahoma. So you learned that it's a good place to smoke stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's a lot of smokage that can go on up there.
There is, but I'm definitely
but
only smoking certain things up there, for sure.
Yeah, pretty particular about your smoke. But that's on private.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All of that stuff happened on private.
So
for, sure.
And for Buck Truck, we were hunting public, right?
Yeah.
And so that kind of changes a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
There's still game around, but when everybody has access to it, it changes like the way you hunt. It changes the way deer relate to agriculture and everything, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're just getting messed around a whole lot. Like you said, there's a lot of birds up there. So you got people hunting ducks and all this stuff that just kind of changes mm-hmm. things, right? So
there's good quail hunting in Oklahoma too.
Yeah.
Like if you look at a quail distribution map for the U.S. Mm-hmm. I mean, Oklahoma is like the red spot. You know, it's the heart of.
They still live there.
They do.
I hadn't seen a quail in a long time in Texas.
I mean, it ain't looking good, y'all. But no. I'm just saying, it's as good as it looks in Oklahoma.
So, I have since hunted Oklahoma a little more.
You know what quail hunters don't like is deer hunters.
That's right.
I'll tell you that right now.
That's right.
Remember that thing, that legislation that passed a while back in Texas.
Yeah,
where
I don't
like
know what
95% of the people voted to extend the north season to the same as the south, and the quail hunters had a problem
the
with
lobbyists
it.
For the quail unlimited and stuff kind of stepped in there.
The guys with the
money?
Big rings.
I don't know
hair.
If you know this, and we're probably offending somebody, but that's all right. People who are members of Quail Unlimited sometimes have like a gold pinky ring. You know, it's a particular thing.
I got to give you one, man.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Man. A lot of things you could do with that.
I know where you can get one.
Do you?
El Mana. My
That's
kids funny. Throw a fit every year, or every time they come out of El Mana and don't get
the
a
little, the a, little vending machine.
Get
there.
To put a quarter in the deal.
Yeah. So I hunted Oklahoma last year, and I think Hunter Dickens hunted Oklahoma the year before that. Is that right?
He has.
Yes, he did.
Yeah,
he did. He He's did. A, they is, had some tough hunts, caused tons.
Yep.
And. Oh, there's a lot of things that go into that. I guess one of the ones that hunters struggle with, to speak for him a little bit, was there's sporadic weather, especially as it gets later in the year up
there.
I wish
Hunter could be on this thing.
Yeah, he's operating in a different wavelength. but
frequency.
So I know that he struggled with some snow and stuff, and he was hunting different part where than where we ended up hunting this past year, or even I hunted. But then you have like hot weather and just everything in between. Drought's been terrible. In fact, if you look to the year of 2021, which is some of my more favorite hunting occurred in the year 2021, it was a bad drought across a large portion of the U.S. What are you smiling about?
Funting, favorite hunting.
Yeah, that's right.
So, actually, 22 was the worst drought, I believe.
Past year?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I know during season was when they really got dry in 21.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and that's the funny thing about drought maps. I'm doing it not even on purpose.
Draps.
they will show you for the year, pretty much, year-to-date data, which right now it's thundering here.
Don't worry. It's not going to rain.
It's not going to rain. They're controlling it. But you can go somewhere and it looked pretty lush, but overall the yearly rainfall is behind. Well, in 2022 we ran into that some, and it seemed as if 2021 was a drier year overall, and that affected deer. The crop fields were different; they were weird. Deer were heading to water quite a bit, and it took a while to kind of learn that. But I did end up having some success over water. Mm-hmm. Tyler was filming me. Y'all might know this is where the birth of Buck Truck truly happened. Buck Truck was conceived in South Dakota 2021, but then
you and Hunter conceived
that's
it.
That's right.
Conceived the Buck Truck.
And then, Tyler helped deliver in December of 2021, mm-hmm. Where the A-team came in and put a buck in the truck in Oklahoma. That's a pretty crazy video if y'all haven't watched. It's on the Element channel. I shoot a deer at 14 yards in the chest, like straight up hard quarter two, and it is the best shot I've ever put on a deer, the most lethal thing you can possibly do. Sounds like you were just shoving your fist through a watermelon. It is cool. And then there's some dramatic episodes with barbed wire after that. So you should probably go watch it if you haven't.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you're listening to this, you can watch it on our Instagram. We will make sure that gets posted before this thing releases.
Yeah, for sure. So that whole episode happened because we were hunting a different pattern of just bucks cruising and then noticed a water hole that had deer tracks around it. And mm-hmm. decided to set up a camera there, and it led us to see that deer were using that in the daylight, and we set up and shot the deer headed to water. It was pretty awesome. And so cameras actually have played a part in what we do in Oklahoma quite a bit, because there's a lot of these little public parcels around, but they're all really spread out. And you might end up having to hop around, so it's nice to have a couple cameras around to kind of know what's going on. Mm-hmm. So we use those Moultrie mobile cell cams some, and they work really well, and they've helped us out a lot. But mm-hmm. the deal with Oklahoma is that just how Tyler starts the buck truck video, it's true. What can anybody do?
Buy a tag and go hunt.
Go hunt in Oklahoma.
Don't matter if you're a non-resident or whatever.
So
you can even be a gun hunter and hunt on some of this stuff. You
can.
Know?
So. It's hunting pressure is the deal. This is not – so one of the things that people who film their hunts and put them on YouTube get in trouble for from the general public sometimes – and guys, by the way, we're not going to rail on the YouTube commenters today. This is a positive environment.
That's right.
But it actually – this does qualify as like something to be aware of, is that YouTube hunters sometimes get in trouble for spotlighting places. We are not trying to do that. First of all, we're talking about a whole state. We ain't going to tell you where we're at because we don't want you there. And then, two, we're going to tell you how real it is. There are people everywhere. Mm-hmm. There are people messing up your hunt, usually unintentionally.
Oh, you showed me, speaking of the Moultrie mobile trail cameras, you pulled up the app earlier and showed me a picture of a dude coming past one of our cameras, and I was like, yeah, I saw that dude that same night in the next drainage over.
Old Slim.
He's walking around right at sunset.
Just bottom lands up, just rolling around. You know, that dude was already 6'2", and his hat was 5 inches above his head.
Man.
Hi-hatting it.
See, but, that's you know what? And that's something that them 20-year-olds, 20-something-year-olds don't get.
Yeah.
Their hats are too high. They're getting seen.
It's because they got a lot of fluff up there. I don't have anything –
yeah,
it's meat to hat.
Slick,
you know what
baby.
I mean? That's it.
Got aerodynamics and everything, man.
Brett Michaels style. So yep. You catch me next year just hunting in a bandana on my head.
Dadgummit, let's go. You and Jim Shockey,
that's
man.
That's it, dude.
Except for Jim actually has hair.
So one of the things we have to do in Oklahoma, and one of the things I struggle with, is it coming down out there?
It's raining.
Big drops. So
oh, it stopped.
Yeah, we should have talked about it. To avoid the hunting pressure, sometimes you just have to get somewhere and walk your little booties off.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm talking about your boots you wear. And we got into a pattern of having to walk way back to get away from some hunting pressure. And what it does, it after a few days, puts you in a bind because you're walking for 45 minutes, and then you're walking out for 45 minutes, and you're driving for – who knows how long to get back to the place you're staying, and you're getting in bed like at 11, and then you got to get up at 4:30 the next morning and go hunting. That's a good way to end up real tired and not making your best decisions. So just the whole logistics is just tough. It's a public land thing. A lot of people struggle with this anywhere you go. It's like, man, deer live in places where the people don't go very much. And that means that, like, there's not really a great place to stay. There's not great access. You got to get creative with stuff, and it just wears you out sooner or later.
Yeah.
And so it's something that we've struggled with quite a bit in the past.
Yeah, for sure. You know, that was kind of something that I just kind of got to the point this year where I was like, man, I'm just going to walk no matter what. We're just going to not pay attention to how much – you know, I've never had one of those watches that track you or whatever, you know, and tell you how fast your heart's beating and how many miles you walked and stuff. I don't even know if I trust those things fully anyway.
I don't, because they will always say, oh, you walked 27 miles today. It's like, I don't know. Yeah, try to make you
rode on the four-wheeler.
Exactly.
I mean, maybe it was counting my steps but you know, I walked a lot, man. But, you know, one thing that is frustrating that you can end up walking into is because you're gonna walk – you know, to basically a lot of times you're going to be hunting near private land. Because, you know, if you think about walking a mile and a half, you could do that on, you know, pretty easy on like a 1,000-acre chunk, right? You could walk a mile on a 640, right? I mean, if it's a square. So you could, I mean, you potentially 600 acres, if it was built the right way, you could walk a mile and a half on too. And you end up hunting close to a private land boundary. Well, sometimes you get back there in Oklahoma, and there's a feeder, and it don't set up good for you to kill deer going to that feeder.
But you can watch deer all night.
Yeah.
On somebody else's place.
And so that's another struggle that we have dealt with in the past is, you know, figuring out, you know, are people going to be feeding when you get back there? Because, you know, one thing you can see on X that's hard to see. You can't always see the feeder deal, but you can see ag sources. So for people who are hunting in ag country, like sometimes this is too, you know, you may see wheat or beans or whatever on the map, and it's probably going to be that, and you can kind of bank on the fact that as long as it's a food source, whatever it is, then, you know, I can get in this draw and deer are going to come up through that draw of this or whatever. One thing we struggled with last year with being such a bad drought is even compared to 2021, the ag was different. And it was very, even like within a field, there would be one section that was usually the lower section of the field or something like that, that was the only place there was actually even any wheat growing or whatever, right? So like you end up with this deal where it's like, it's got, if you're not looking at the lowest part of the field as a place that you can hunt deer moving to, then you don't even have a chance to hunt deer on that field really well.
Yeah.
So like the dependency, that of water for an ag, you know, the ag fields last year was super high because there wasn't enough water to keep the whole thing looking green.
You know, something else that you're talking about the deer feeder stuff, deer's big business in a lot of the country, especially when you're talking about Oklahoma, places that people can feed and hunt. And so people get pretty possessive about this stuff. And it's kind of weird because it kind of pits sportsmen against one another sometimes. And in a way, it shouldn't. But, like, there's some landowners up there that do not like that their property intertwines with the public stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I know in 2021, I had an issue with this. A guy tried to run me off and tell me I couldn't park where I was set up. And I told him, you know, he thought he was going to just intimidate me. And I was like, no, you're wrong. But since it bothers you, I'll move my truck a couple hundred yards up the road. And he's like, well, I guess that'll do, you know, or whatever. Well, I ended up seeing that guy the next day out of his truck, and he was not very intimidating, if you know what I mean. Now, when a guy's in a truck, you don't know if he's got that hammer back or not, you know. So you kind of like, this is weird when you're out in the middle of nowhere in a sketchy encounter. Yeah. But, like, grumpy landowners, it's a tough thing that we have to deal with as public land hunters, and we probably need to navigate pretty good because you know what ends up happening? That guy knows the local Leo, and as we've dealt with more recently, it's like, man, you got to see that guy's point of view. Well, like, no, I actually don't have to see that guy's point of view because I have a right to do this. If we want to change the law, you can change the law. Otherwise, yeah. I said I wasn't going to go down that road. I'm sorry. But that wasn't the YouTube commenters that we were talking about. But anyways, there's this, what's it called, how you carry yourself and operate is like couth or something like that.
Couth? That would be couth. That would be more of a, like, proper way of – it's almost like etiquette.
I think
couth would be like etiquette.
Yeah, so there's an etiquette to how you deal with the public-private land interface of land ownership that will help perpetuate our ability to still have access to places. Because I've seen it. State agencies, law enforcement agencies, the feds – they would rather just not deal with the problem, so they'll just shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's actually a really dumb way to operate. Take my ball and go home, but it's a thing that happens. So we gotta not cause too much of a stir.
There's another thing there, which I understand, and you always say it, but you're a private land advocate
absolutely.
Guy, right?
Yeah,
a private land rights advocate. But you know, what you're gonna get a lot of times is this is me looking at like stereotypes and how people might perceive this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have the local law enforcement guy, and he's going to see a dude who's hunting public land as being kind of a redneck, right? He can't afford to get him a lease like everybody else does up here or whatever, so he's out there hunting that public stuff. And I know Jimmy Don over here, he's a pretty good old boy. You know, he goes to my church, whatever. And so, you know, you got to see his point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Law aside, he's not breaking the law, but he's also not enforcing the law necessarily. Mm-hmm. And he just doesn't want to deal with it because when you leave and go home, you're going to, you know, talk about it on a podcast. but for real, you know, most people are just going to, you know, talk about their coffee shop. Yeah. He was a prick, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But when he goes back to his house that night, wakes up the next morning, he still has to see Jimmy Don at the convenience store and at church next weekend and stuff. And he doesn't really want to ruffle feathers because it's just not fun to deal with that. So I see why that happens. It's just a frustrating thing that we have to deal with and can't just be like, you know what? Here's the law. Jimmy Don, I'm sorry. I have to do this because this is my job. This is what I'm hired to do. And guess who pays me for it?
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. I don't know if you stopped in at an O'Reilly lately, but I use one because we have one right not too far from my house. People there are super helpful. I don't care if I'm getting boat batteries, car parts, whatever. Love those guys. They got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you don't have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free. in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. If you need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fixed, quick service, they'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you are a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts to be knowledgeable, helpful, and best of all, friendly. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things do-it-yourself auto. You can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's OReillyAuto.com/meateater. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today. Because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
So that kind of all rolls into what sets us up for our hunt in 2022. We know all this stuff from prior experiences. We know that there's a decent amount of game, but there's a lot of hunters and a lot of hurdles to get over. So we, if you didn't see, had a fantastic hunt in Kansas and on private land.
How about that?
LS, yeah. Public opportunity is kind of tough there. So we decided that, you know, Oklahoma was on the way home because we live in Texas. Might as well stop there in the buck truck and do a little hunting. And that's what we did. You know, it was no matter what the weather or whatever, you got to be hunting on the middle of or early November, right? Mm-hmm. And might as well be hunting in Oklahoma since we shot some deer in Kansas. Now, since the places we could hunt were spread out, and all the details about the drought and all that, what did we do as soon as we got there?
Drove like crazy.
Drove our gas pedals off.
Yep.
So we put some rubber to the gravel and did us a lot of truck scouting. And I know it seems a little lazy, and I still can't process it in my mind. But truck scouting is extremely efficient for us,
yeah.
I feel like.
I mean,
we do a lot of good from the truck. And it's counterintuitive because mm-hmm. you think that you got to get back in there to see what's actually going on. And this is true. There are properties that there will be like deer know the lay of the land. They'll be right over the hill. You'll never see them. And mm-hmm. they just live there happily ever after. But there's something to it.
Well, two things here. A, you're taking what you can get. Mm-hmm. And what you can observe, and you do a really good job of observing from the road. You see trails that cross the road a lot, and then you are able to make deductions from that. And then, like, generally speaking, we are looking for what ag is in mm-hmm. what places, and is it an ag source that is preferential this mm-hmm. time of year and going to be used? What draws or drainages did we not see?
Let's stop on the ag stuff right quick. Get that next point. So the thing with the ag and driving is that to be able to harvest the ag, you have to be able to get trucks and tractors to the ag. So there's almost always a road that's most likely a public road that touches an ag field at some point. So you can always go check those things.
Yep.
You know, like, and that's the whole idea behind farm to market roads. That's why a lot of these roads exist in the country, is because you're getting the stuff that's grown out there back to the commerce centers to be able to distribute it, right? So you're going to be able to drive around and at least hit those ag sources, if nothing else.
Yeah, for sure. Another thing you're getting to see is what can you not see from the road, right? Because you can't always tell that from the map, especially in more flat country. But, like, if you think you can see this from the road because it's right there, and then all of a sudden there's a pond dam and you can't see on the other side of that pond dam or whatever, for whatever reason, that may be something worth noting. So we're seeing that stuff too. And then, you know, there's a few other things, trees that you can hang in, maybe like glassing points and stuff that just didn't stick out to you. And then really the one probably main thing out of all this that we're doing is eliminating ground, because you show up to a place, you may show up to a place and you've got, like, within an hour and a half, you've got, you know, tens and tens of thousands of acres that you could potentially hunt. Well, if I can get rid of about, you know, 6,000 acres in this little area over here, then I can know I need to stay the night over here, camp here, or get in a hotel over here, and then I can work out of that to this area the next day, and then I eliminate ground there, and I can go somewhere else, and then, oh, this is good, you know?
That's something that we're still in the process of learning, because it's a hard thing to do, because you get emotionally tied to some properties or some hunting places that you've hunted in the past or whatever. And I know in South Dakota, especially, looking back on that episode of Buck Truck and some of the years prior, like, it's real hard to let go of a place. And I know that the eliminating ground takes time sometimes. And I think that that's where hunting with a buddy helps, because especially, you know, we talk about this a lot, but it's a huge point for Tyler and I. We will just stand there and shoot holes in the boat until it sinks. And that's a great thing for eliminating ground, because, like, I'll be in love with a place and Tyler will be like, well, how are you going to access it? You know, and you're like, well, that's true, you know, or whatever it may be.
You got, you know, for most dudes, you got 50 or less yards you can shoot in any direction. So draw a circle around that. That's the amount of land you can kill a deer on.
Yeah.
And you, and with a bow. Right. So
Onyx actually has a feature you can do that
there with. There you go. Yeah. A radius deal. Yeah. So, and so my point is, you can go up to a place, and say, oh, we got 10,000 acres to hunt, you know, and it doesn't matter because you can't shoot across 10,000 acres.
That's right.
You know, so you got to find the place that the deer are. My point is, I can literally find a 10,000 acre chunk. And if I eliminate everything to the point of I've got 40 yards here, and this is where the deer are coming through, and then the deer comes through at 40 yards or 30 yards, and I shoot him. That's exactly what my goal was. It wasn't to find a place that was 10,000 acres.
Now, you do have to drop him if you're going to do that.
If it's a 40-acre parcel or 40-yard parcel, you know. And what's funny is you and I have both hunted some stuff that, like, you gotta make a good shot.
That's right.
I mean, it's a small chunk.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
It's worth
it. We both spent time there. In fact, in several states, I've done that. And like you said, we're not spotlighting anything, so not talking too much about it. But, I mean, I killed a deer 80 yards off the road, and that was a pretty thin mint little area right there.
I've killed a deer 120 yards off the road, you know, like, and that stuff gets overlooked, and you could drive right by it and not even know the spot's there because it just looks like the rest of everything.
Yeah.
But,
or
so,
it doesn't even – it's, you know, sometimes, like, if it's not a big public track, there's no markers or nothing like that, you know, because it's not worth their time to mark that stuff for every little chunk.
That's
a
good point, too, is that I can remember in my younger days being a little guilty of this, looking at places and just looking at the public only. And observing ag fields helps you with that because those are usually on private. But you can also look at the greater picture of cover, drainages, all this stuff. And when you're driving around, yeah, the public might be an 80-acre place or something, but it's in the heart of 300 acres of just bad-to-the-bone stuff. It's great, even if it is small.
Yeah,
so that's the thing to think about. And when we're doing all this driving in Oklahoma, we're checking ag, but also the year before, I'd killed over water. So I think that one of the things we started out doing was looking around for, you know, ponds, I call them pools, or water tanks or whatever, and seeing which ones we could see from the road or which ones were a short hike in, and trying to hop over to that stuff, and just trying to see if that was still going to be a thing.
Yeah, you know, another thing that in regards to that you can do that's really effective in the driving sphere, and you'll see it in this episode when it drops. We quickly get out of the car and check a like cattle tank,
mm-hmm.
and because if there's deer tracks there, then that gives you that. I mean, that gives you like, okay, well, they're definitely keen in on this type of water. Can we relate that other way in other ways, or can we shoot a deer here, or can we shoot one 100 yards over there where they, you know, before they come out at mm-hmm. night? But what you're going to run into a lot of times in those close to the road spots is there's not a whole lot deer sign, not a whole lot of deer sign going on right there. Mm-hmm. So you're eliminating like perimeter stuff there, mm-hmm. and you're quickly doing it. I mean, we walked out there, and in 3 minutes we're back in the truck, and we're next spot.
And that's the thing too, is you have to don't try to wring out a wash rag and get the last little drop out. You know, mm-hmm. if it ain't dripping quick, don't worry with it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, cause you got to be pretty efficient. And there's a lot of variables in deciding if a place is worth hunting or not. But one of the things you can do when you do find water that deer are using and you're like, man, there's no way to hunt them right here, look at the bigger picture and understand right. that, hey, this property supports deer because there's water here.
Where are they coming from?
Where are they living?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
Where they bedded, as they like to say out there, right?
But
so
on that note, I mean, you're going to have to, you know, if you don't find – deer sign on that stuff, then that's when you got to kind of start walking. And I think we kind of got to that point where, like, I know at least for me, you know, I didn't feel too confident in much going on up there at the time.
It felt like a dadgum struggle.
Yeah.
Because we just had like a mini cold front a few days before, and then all of a sudden it's that like Indian summer type deal. It's not hot, but like you just get some warm, balmy days with some weird wind directions. They're kind of still. And let me tell you something. A warm, still day is my least favorite deer hunting.
Yep.
I got to have a little bit of wind or some cool weather or something to feel good. And I was not feeling good.
Yep.
It's weird how, like, you can go on a hunt and it'd be one of the better hunts you've ever been on. But for a long time, it feels kind of bad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it was feeling. Like, well, we drove around that first evening and we had some excitement.
Yeah, we did. We did. I'll make this a short story, right?
But yeah, that way you got to go watch the video to get the full experience.
Yeah, this is – we're, you know, we got some keen eyes in the back seat, a couple of them for sure. And Mr. Greg spots a deer, and he's like, I think it was a buck, you know. So I think we backed up or something, and we're like, oh, it's a buck, you know.
No, sitting, I don't know.
We're like, oh, what do we do? You know, it's kind of getting a little bit later in the afternoon. And so we decide, okay, he's fixing to break into this little cedar or go into the cedar break. And when he does that, we'll hop out, Greg and I'll hop out and glass. Okay. I gotta be careful. I'll make this a long story, but we get out real quick. We start glassing, y'all park the truck. We start talking and we're like, man, there's public right over there. Let's try to call him across the road. It's November, you know, 6th or whatever, 7th, whatever it was. And so, anyway, we
six.
Yeah, I believe it was.
This is hard.
So, but anyway, it's a good day, right?
Yes.
To call deer in. So, we grab a couple things, bow, and go make this move. And basically, we called this deer to us, and he was a providential deer. he had a good stroke of fortune for the evening there. So, he was, in other words, very close to taking a method arrow. And anyway, we end up going back to our camper and making some map ideas.
They don't all
life.
Come that easy. But that deer taught us something and showed us a little bit about how the deer move around.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when you decided to just put on your walking shoes.
Yeah. That's basically what – I mean – like I said, not feeling confident, mm-hmm. so go walk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And see what you can figure out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Eric was with me on this trip. And we end up walking, you know, crazy amounts. I can't remember. It was, you know, we were only there like 2.5-3 days, something like that. But one of the first mornings there, I get out there and I'm walking. We walk deep into a property. And all of a sudden, you know, there's a – here's something. We've talked about Eric's eyesight before, I think, on here, right? Haven't we? I think because of it, he sees contrasty things really well.
Yeah.
And so he spots this deer from like way
off.
Dude,
he can see stuff every once in a while.
I think it's like there's a dot over there, and I see that thing, you know.
Maybe he's like a T-Rex. He sees movement.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Yeah, and heat and stuff.
Little arms.
That goes. Oh, so and he's a meat eater. How
that's
about
it.
That? Just like T-Rex.
That's it.
So he
carnivore though.
Carnivore, but meat eater. So that's and the whole point is he eats a lot of Taco Bell. So anyway, he sees this deer and we're like, I'm like, all right, I guess we'll go over. It's like way over there. This deer's following this doe. Long story short, we get in there. This is a nice 8-point. We're making some things happen, and we kind of get caught. So we just make a run for it, and you'll have to kind of see how it plays out. But dude, I'm talking. You want to get your heart rate going.
Yeah.
You know, then just do the Greg and take off running across the plains with a camera in your hand and a big old deer come up.
Right, it's a good way to breathe.
Yeah, it is. You know, people don't understand that it wasn't just the running that made Greg breathe, but it was the anxiety of having a 155 walk up that's 22 inches wide, just stare at you at 30 yards, you know.
Greg and I were pig hunting the other night, and we, like, have this boar patterned, right?
Yeah.
This hunt's going to be on the Element channel this week. You can go watch it. But this boar pig, like, straight up on time shows up. And Greg's like, there he is right there. And Greg gets excited, and it's good.
He's getting you
and
up.
Then he
you
got me so excited that I had to calm myself down. And we're talking about a 150-pound boy.
I think Greg calmed you down.
He probably did. I could feel his presence. Being around Greg is like a warm hug, you know?
It is, man. It's like a Mark Kenyon hug, you know?
That's
it. Double hug.
But yeah, it's excitement's there for sure. Greg and I actually – went a different route than you did. I had a lot of confidence in an area because of pretty much historical hunts mixed with some trail camera data. And went into a place I'd seen a buck bedded the year before and was like, that is a killing spot. Went in there, found scrapes in the dark on the way in, you know, just feeling awesome. Pretty remote, and got up in this tree and didn't see a deer. It was just like kind of disheartening. And then went out and did the walk thing the next evening, just like what you're talking about. Didn't see a deer. It was disheartening. But then on the way out, we actually bumped a buck who was like near our truck, which kind of made me sad.
Buck truck.
Yeah. But the next day kind of went back with that historical data feel. You know, one of the things that we had going on up there, like I said earlier, was some weird wind directions. But they worked pretty good for the way we were hunting. You know, there's like these creeks and draws and stuff that run, you know, primarily a certain direction, you know, whether it's east, west, north, south. But they're kind of straight, but, you know, the nuances of them are kind of back and forth or whatever. But those deer still travel them kind of in a straight direction. So they'll kind of cut corners on the bends and stuff like that because, you know, a lot of them are dry or real, you know, shallow creeks or whatever. And we had a decent little east wind that morning, and it was kind of hot and muggy. And it's weird, but hunting together, you and I have had some pretty good hunts on mornings like this. And I don't know what it is. I think it's most likely just good dates.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it ain't like I'm going to go out because it's kind of foggy and muggy and hot. It's more of like, hey, it's November 8th, and there's going to be a buck somewhere doing what he wants to do, you know, doing the bucky stuff. So we kind of went out. You were doing the walk thing again that day, right, because it kind of was working well for you. We had run a camera in there the past year and had a camera out in there this year. And we're seeing some deer. A lot of it was nighttime stuff, though, which is not great. But a guy I used to hunt with some used to talk about how all he needs is a picture of the deer to feel good, which is not how I normally think about things. I want to see daylight bucks, but I get it for rut stuff. And it's because they aren't doing just the pattern. They are figure eight and zigzagging, and who knows, especially too, if you've ever hunted near your trail cameras, you know how much stuff goes on around it. In fact, that boar we were just talking about, that hog hunt, he walked right in front of the camera, but this raccoon was already in there and had triggered the camera just a bit before. So when he walked in front of the camera, it was on the lag and didn't get his picture. No fault of the camera. It's doing the settings I told it to. But if we hadn't been there to see it, we would have never known that pig was there. You know, and deer do the same thing. You know, who knows? You get a picture of a doe by herself, there's liable to be a buck right behind her. It's a good reason to run a burst, by the way.
Or but it's saying, and to your point, what you were saying earlier, like a lot of times, if you've ever watched deer, you'll have a buck come in one direction, and all of a sudden he'll alert to some does that are like 150 yards off, and he'll just change his whole course, right? And so the thing is, he's probably going to come back through at that at some point. And so the rut just makes everything a possibility.
That's right,
That's why it's the best, dude.
And I'd hunted this little creek before. And so I kind of knew some stuff. In fact, Eric and I hunted on the ground there in 2021. And we were right up next to this little cedar tree. And some cows came around the corner of the cedar tree and, like, scared the cow. And Eric thought it was hilarious, you know. But after being in there, we kind of, like, chronicled where you could actually hang a tree stand or a saddle in this case. And saddle trees are different than tree stand trees, by the way. If you're not a saddle hunter, we use those Cruiser XCs, and they're real comfortable, but you can – any tree, if there's enough room to get a shot out of, becomes a tree you can hunt out of. And it's changed the way I hunt because used to, especially early on, I was hunting out of a climber a good bit. Well, you got to have a real specific tree in East Texas for a climber. And then Michael's nodding his head because that's what he hunted with a lot, too, in Ohio. And then we did the tree stand thing for a while, which gives you a little bit more flexibility. But still, you got to have a decent-sized tree. Dude, a saddle, I can't tell you how many times I've hung in a tree that's like a 4-inch diameter type deal. And this situation was a lot like that. When Eric and I were on the ground, we saw this willow tree, which already gets Tyler's hair standing up on his neck.
Dude,
I'm
telling you, if you're in a willow tree, you are in a killing tree, dude.
That's it, dude. They are good, and it's not because willows they're easy to hunt out of. It's not at all. In fact, willow trees are loud. There's a lot of little wispy sticks from the first season. I mean, the past spring on them. The bark is usually pretty flaky and loud, and they're just a little bit difficult.
They grow. They lean bad.
They
man.
Do. They do. They almost never grow straight up. But this one is kind of like a regrow stump or something. It's got multiple trunks. I like multiple trunk trees. A lot of cover in a multiple trunk tree. And we decided, or I'd seen that tree and marked it before and said, man, that's a good tree to set up in because it's on like an inside bend in the creek to where the deer can't really get behind you. There's one trail that they can get behind you on, but overall, you're not like missing deer too much, especially with that east wind. We're on the west side. Bucks are going to be cruising the west side of this creek drainage, running north and south, trying to smell the does that are bedded out in the cover. I mean, that's my thought at least, right? So Greg and I, providentially, are a little bit late to our hunting spot because you and I had looked at the camera data the night before. And there was a lot of deer moving through there just before shooting light, which is a real sketchy time because that's when you're setting up. So you could either get there an hour early and risk still spooking them or just be like 10 minutes late and the deer have already gone through. Well, we opted for the latter option and we weren't super late, but I think that about the time that we were kind of settled, like there could be a deer there. Like it would be shooting light about the time. And I like to be settled before that. You like to be settled a long time before that.
Yeah, I like to be set up and settled in the dark, ideally. It doesn't happen all the time, as Michael knows.
Yeah.
We went in hunting East Texas last year, and I had to do the fireman pole slide down a big Schumard oak tree before I after I'd already decided I was gonna hunt on the ground, and then it was just a big
there's always something. And I think even on the way in we may have bumped a deer and it kind of slowed us down. I get my hunts confused. Anyways, we were setting up a little bit late, trying to be quiet, but it's, you know, a loud willow tree. And then, it's kind of like you give your buddy the nod, like, all right, we're hunting, you know, like, let's get steel mm-hmm. or whatever. We got all our clothes on or whatever. And it's not, and that's another thing, too, is warm. So we kind of got hot on the way in. And I'm like a bear trying to get out of its den in the morning when I'm climbing. I just get so sweaty hanging stuff. And so the scent-free thing is just not a thing for me, especially on public ground. If you're a public land hunter, you kind of know how that works, right? But so I was sweated up. I was lathered, as they say. We're like, no lie, in the tree for maybe 10 minutes. I bet it's less than that. And then I start hearing some stuff breaking, like sticks and twigs and stuff.
Indians making arrows.
Yeah. They were napping down there. If you know what I mean. And I'm like, what is going on? And I kind of had an idea, but I'm very optimistic. Someone might say wishful. And so I was like, man, could this really be a buck just breaking limbs down there? And I got to looking, and I got my rangefinder up. A lot of times when I'm in a tree and it's, you know, heavier cover, I don't use my binos even. I just use that rangefinder. It's 7 power, and, you know, it's plenty good enough. And I'm scanning around, and sure enough, I see this wispy, you know, young growth tree going back and forth. Kind of freaking out.
Spooky.
You know, and I get Greg's attention, and I can't remember how it went, really, but I think we saw him about the same time and saw that there was a deer down there doing it. And I don't know what he is, but it's for sure a buck. I ain't a doe doing this, you know. And so then it's like, oh, wow, this is how sketchy trees always are. You're like, there ain't no way this works, but it might. And then all of a sudden it does. You're like, that was the best decision I ever made. You know? And that's how it felt right there. And I can see that cedar tree that Eric and I were sitting by. It's like 5 yards away. And I know I've seen does take this same trail before, and sometimes they, like, escape up the hill and go who knows where. And this deer, I'm watching him. I'm thinking, oh, please come over here, man. And I'm not going to do any calling or anything to him because he can see us if he wanted to. I'm just, at this point in time, I'm already, like, looped on, you know, ready to go. Excuse me. And he, like, kind of noses up where I was worried he was going to go away. And then he heads back on course on the trail towards us. I'm like, oh. And he's like 35 at this point in time. Like, it's almost shooting. But I have low-hanging limbs, and that cedar's there, and I can't really – there's no clear shot. And it would be like a straight-on frontal at a deer that's already walking to you. There's no reason to take that shot, you know. Like, he's going to get closer. Well, little did I know that this deer – was going to get way closer than you really ever need a deer. Now, keep in mind, we are barely one stick high. I mean, my stick is like, I have an aider on one stick. So my aider hangs down to 3 foot off the ground. Then the first step is like 4.5 foot and then 6 foot. And then my platform is like a foot above that. I bet my platform is at 7 foot. And Greg probably has his platform at 9 foot right behind me. And this deer is coming in at my weak side. And I have Greg here as well. I can't shoot through him or the tree or really take a shot that direction. And he's coming right down the trail, right at us. And he, like, dips his head under this tree limb. And then he's just, like, looking at us as he's walking. But thankfully, it's November 8th, and they just aren't as scared. I mean, I know he was skylining us up there. We were blobs, you know. But, I mean, thankfully, had on some camo, you know. It helps, of course. Really, really still. That means a ton. Greg, in fact, even was afraid to follow him with the camera too much because he was so close. And I'm thankful that it worked out the way it did. It's still really good footage. But this deer, like, is looking at us. He is staring down the camera in the footage. And he's like, I don't know. I think 8 yards. I feel like it's closer, but I think it truly is 8 yards. And there's a trail that he can take that goes to the base of our tree behind us, and I will never shoot at this thing. and he would be 6 feet from us. And I mean 6 feet. I don't mean 6 feet from the base of the tree. I mean, he would be 6 feet from us.
Straight underneath.
I mean, we would be eye to eye because he would start to go up the hill.
Oh, I got you. Yeah.
And so, like, I'm not panicking, but I'm very much evaluating the situation. Like, if he goes that way, it's over. So, like, I'm very calm, and I'm thinking, like, well, this probably isn't going to work out, but it was really fun. I'm glad this happened. And then he kind of, like, just ever so slightly gets weird, and it worked out to our advantage. He decides to kind of veer out to a more opportune spot for me, out to about 18 yards, and then go... I guess there was a trail or something, but he was smelling it hard. He was rutted up.
And you can hear it in the audio. Yeah.
It's wild how much he was like smelling and snorting around. And I have an opportunity to draw my bow at this point in time. And from there on, it's time to watch Buck Truck.
I wish you would have drawn, man.
I know, man.
Crazy.
I wish I'd taken the opportunity. But
such a close encounter, man.
Man, we had some really good hunts on that trip. And I'm glad that you had fun and had some good hunts, too, because I was feeling a little bad. Not really, because you're usually the guy who always kills all the big deer, and I play cleanup. But, you'd killed a really nice deer in Kansas, but I'd killed a deer like 3 days before that was the buck of my lifetime. And then... had this opportunity, so I was
so
glad.
You decided not to draw.
Yeah, I decided to pass.
Pull the old
pass
air,
out.
Get your pass.
Pass out. So that was a lot of fun, and it's crazy how efficient you can be sometimes. Like, and we were rocking and rolling. And I get that not everybody gets to hunt that much, but man, if you get somebody else who is dedicated to this thing, and y'all can bounce some good ideas off of one another, like. You can formulate a plan for some dadgum good encounters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun when you're seeing deer.
Dude, it is. It's fun, man. Like, you know, you and I talk about this, but practically, you and I eat venison all year long,
mm-hmm.
multiple times a week usually. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're not necessarily like cutting the deer open and eating its, you know, inner
spleen
yeah. or whatever, you know, like we're not doing the, you know, eat it on the trip. Cause usually once you tag out, most people go home.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
That's right.
I mean, you just got family and stuff. You want to get
to, you
know?
Oh, by the way, we don't have a kitchen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We got
it's
a cooler.
Tough. That's right. And we didn't bring a bunch of different ingredients and stuff. So, you know, it makes it tough, but it doesn't mean that we don't eat these things. And,
hey, we
and
had
love
a dadgum good stew you made on that trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and we ate
but
some
tacos. But I made that from another deer.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
That's
and
right.
So, yeah, but my whole point is, you know, that stuff is part of the whole thing for it. We love that. We both love to cook, man. But there's also a really cool thing where you can start to dial a deer in and figure it out and get in. I mean, the way to make that stew is to figure out the deer and kill it.
Mm-hmm.
Plain and simple.
Yep.
And that's the part I enjoy too. You don't have to enjoy that part, but I do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but either way, if you're going to eat that stew, even if you don't enjoy it, you still got to do it. Mm-hmm. Or you just don't eat the stew.
Yeah.
And if you don't do it well, sometimes we've seen where you just don't eat very many stews that
the
year.
Coyotes yeah. eat the stew.
Or that too, right. You know?
Yeah.
So it's part of it. But anyway, I just wanted to kind of make that note because it's not, you know, we try our best to put all this on video and make people, you know, enjoy it. Not make people, but let people enjoy it. But, you know, there's questions that arise because you got to take, you know, 16 hours of footage and make it into 45 mm-hmm. minutes or less. And
yeah, people know. Also, like, some people who view this stuff just don't know. And I get that
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
But I don't remember if it was you or Cassie that made this point. I think it might've been my wife, but she was like, you know, because she reads comments and thinks about them a lot. I'm trying not to do that. But she's like, you know, what people don't understand is, I said we want to do this, so I'm not raging. But
yeah.
It's a good point, is that you don't cook for the video. you cook for your family, and you don't want to have your family on video every time you do a hunt, you know? Like, you just, they're practically cooking, just like what you're talking about.
It's just
we're making spaghetti. We're making hamburgers. We're making tacos, you know, or roast or whatever at the house. And, you know, it's not a thing that we video very much.
I honestly appreciate what Steve does.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's going to cook it, and he's going to show you something cool you can do with it. And I like that a lot. It's inspiring. Mm-hmm. It makes people want to cook. But it's just different strokes,
guys. There's there's a cooking video on our channel. It's called Elk Fajitas. It's a video number one or two.
Oh, man, I can't believe you're pulling this out right now.
And it
dude.
Has about 560 views.
Does it? Yeah. I felt like it had like 140 views.
I overcooked some elk, and we ate it on fajitas, and it was good.
Yeah.
But it is just, you know, Tyler came over and filmed me cooking elk fajitas in our RV camper we were living in at the time, you know, so like pretty rustic. And ever since then, we haven't really done a ton of that because it's not a thing that.
Because it had 140 views.
That's it. That's right. And you know what? When we shoot deer, sometimes it has 400,000 views, you know? So like maybe it's a good idea to just film the deer hunting and understand that we're all doing this because we absolutely love
to shoot
deer.
Casey,
what
did I eat for lunch today?
Tyler. I remarked on how good looking it was.
Yeah.
It was looked like smoked deer roast.
The backstrap.
It was backstrap.
The smoked backstrap.
It's very marbled.
Yeah.
What deer was that?
Colorado mule deer.
How about that?
Yeah.
Those are fat.
Guess
deer.
What? I didn't kill it today.
You didn't. That's right. You, in fact, didn't even eat it on the mountain, did you?
It's actually been 9 months since
I killed
it. How about
that?
And I'm still eating it.
Wow.
So
close to the hunting season.
That's what I like doing, man. I like cooking and eating that stuff later on. But I just wanted to make that point to for those who are maybe new to what we do, like, it's not that we don't eat them, but you don't just always watch us eat them.
That's right. You know? Well,
people don't like it, actually, when I chew gum, which is kind of like eating. And so I'm going to keep that off here.
That's right. So if you do like to see good eating stuff, go check out the Buck Truck stuff, and then also leave a comment while you're there. We really appreciate that. We appreciate y'all's support, the Element Faithful.
Yeah, we do.
Because I know it's a tough time of year for deer hunting, but it's a great time of year to watch some deer hunting and get excited.
Dreaming, dude.
Yeah. And by the way, some other tasty stuff goes down on the Element channel right now. There's going to be a good little pig hunting video coming out pretty quick
tasty.
Here. So go check that out as well. Subscribe to the Element if you haven't. Because that helps us a ton. We really appreciate it, guys. And remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th. The Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25, The Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27, The Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, The Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, The Egyptian in Boise. May 1, The Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, The Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.